Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today we're going to talk about oral reading fluency instruction. This is what I refer to as a blast from the past. These podcasts are based on the Shanahan on Literacy website blog, and this blog entry first appeared on September 29th, 2009, and was reposted on July 27th, 2024. Now, usually I repost a blog when I get a bunch of questions on a topic that I've previously written about, or when there's some public event that renews its relevance. This is something completely different today. It's been quite a while since anyone has asked me any questions about fluency instruction. I used to get quite a few of those. One might assume that that means fluency is now being widely and well taught in schools. I have reason to believe that's not the case. I suspect that with all the current science of reading and promotion of phonics instruction and the pushback against that on behalf of reading comprehension, that fluency instruction is the last thing on many teachers' minds. Years ago, Dick Ellington called out teachers for neglecting fluency instruction, and we might again be in that situation. I've been wanting to write about fluency again for some time, so I decided to update and repost this blog entry, and this one took quite a bit of rewriting to make sure that it was timely and fit with the best things that we know now. I certainly hope it reminds you of something very important about fluency instruction. And what this is an FAQ on teaching oral reading fluency, frequently asked questions. And as you'll see, the organization is just question, answer, question, answer. So the first question here is, do all students need to work with fluency? And the answer to that is, for the most part, yes. However, fluency is a relatively constrained reading skill. That means that students eventually reach a peak level of fluency, at which point instruction can be safely discontinued. That basically means the higher the grade level you teach, the more likely there will be students who won't benefit from additional fluency instruction. If you teach in the elementary grades, you'll not be likely to have many students who can read high school level text with high accuracy and a reading speed of 150 to 175 words per minute. If you do, those kids can safely skip the fluency practice. What's the point of fluency instruction? The earliest thinking on fluency came from Carol Chomsky. Her notion was that students who had learned decoding needed to learn how to implement this knowledge when reading text. This argues for providing both explicit phonics instruction along with fluency practice. Jay Samuels believed that the point of this instruction was to develop automaticity, the ability to carry out a task successfully without conscious attention, which led to his recommendation for repeated reading, since repetition of that type can lead to that level of proficiency. Later, Joe Torgerson, who was looking at fluency with younger readers and lower performing readers, found that students were mainly learning to read particular words. So he argued for the use of text with lots of vocabulary repetition across the grades. Other scholars have noted the important role that fluency practice plays in the development of prosody or expression, meaning that once students can read the words in text successfully, they must make it sound like text, which is entirely a comprehension issue. So basically, what it means to be fluent is that you can recognize the words accurately, that you can do that without a lot of conscious attention. That's that automaticity. And we usually measure automaticity by speed, but we're really not talking about going fast as much as we are being able to do it smoothly and fluently without actually having to think very hard about the decoding part of reading. And it's done with proper expression or prosody. In other words, it sounds like language. So what kinds of teaching improves fluency? The National Reading Panel concluded that oral reading practice with feedback and guidance was valuable in developing fluency. providing some kind of guidance in how to parse or chunk sentences, where to pause when reading, so the words are grouped appropriately, is beneficial as well. Our students are getting low scores on reading comprehension. Why aren't we focused on that instead of fluency? Low comprehension scores can mean many things. Perhaps they do signal problems with language, lousy vocabulary or syntax or cohesion or discourse structure, or maybe limited prior knowledge or just a lack of ability to focus on the right kinds of information. If kids have those kinds of problems, then fluency work is not likely to help. But quite often, the reason for low comprehension is that the students can't read the text well. In other words, if you want higher comprehension, fluency work can be a powerful road to get there. How much fluency teaching are we expected to provide? There's no research that I'm aware of that establishes the most effective amount of fluency instruction. However, looking at the studies that have found such practice to improve reading achievement, and there's several such studies, that's about 25% of the ELA time. If you think about that, if you were doing paired reading every day with your boys and girls, that would mean each student would get about 15 minutes of reading practice a day, or 30-some hours in a school year if the kids were there every day. That's a lot of fluency work, but it would certainly guarantee that a much larger percentage of our boys and girls could read text fluently. How do I keep from embarrassing my low readers? Fluency work is a practice activity, not much different from basketball players shooting free throws prior to a big game. Practice usually isn't embarrassing if everyone knows that it's practice. Most students enjoy fluency work. It's active, involving. They can see their own improvement. Embarrassment is the result of activities like round-robin reading, where one student reads and everyone follows along. Paired situations are much better if they don't single anyone out. I prefer paired reading with the teacher moving among the groups to monitor progress and to provide essential guidance to both the reader and the listener. It also helps to talk to the class at the very beginning to make sure that they understand the purpose of this practice and what to expect. How do I pair the kids? Don't make a big deal out of pairing up, as this can be a real time waster. One rule is to make sure that the students who are working together on a given day are using the same book. That's easy in most classrooms. A second rule is not to pair the same kids all the time. They differ in their ability to give feedback, so share the wealth. My favorite approach to this comes from a teacher who had two class lists, and she rolled them into concentric wheels. That allowed her to adjust the wheels each day so that each child was with a different partner every school day. I thought that was very cool. What kinds of texts should we use for fluency? Many teachers like to select special texts for this work, such as poetry. However, we really want students to become fluent with prose, so practice with prose materials is essential too. Any materials that you are using in class for reading comprehension or in a content subject such as social studies or science are ideal. Remember, we're trying to enable students to read these kinds of texts, so having them practice those kinds of texts makes sense. I've been told that the texts used for fluency should be easy reading. Research says the opposite. In repeated oral reading activities, it's more productive to work with texts that are challenging, even frustration level. It takes more rereading, of course, with those texts, but kids learn more from such practice and are more likely to make progress. Doesn't silent reading improve fluency? Silent reading can contribute to fluency improvement. Kids who read a lot tend to be fluent. Unfortunately, teachers can only be certain if students are fluent by listening to them read. The same can be said for their ability to evaluate the progress and effort that students are making. Silent reading can only contribute to progress when students are really reading and not just looking at pictures, skimming, skipping over unknown words, and turning pages. I insist upon silent reading in grades 2 and up for comprehension work. and oral reading for fluency work. How do I know that fluency activities such as paired reading or chunking work? Well, nothing works automatically. You make it work. Research studies indicate that the various techniques now recommended for teaching reading fluency have been made to work successfully with a broad range of students. Fluency work will improve students' ability with the text they're practicing with, and over time, this ability transfers to the reading of other texts. I work with very young children. Do you recommend fluency work for them? Well, when children are first getting started with reading, you actually want them to be somewhat disfluent. That is, you want the reading to go slowly and choppily enough that each word stands out on its own. Fingerpoint reading is the starting point. However, once students begin to read, you know, when they really are recognizing the words within text and so on, then the fluency goal is the same as for older children, and there we want it to stop being about reading each word and more about recognizing the text. When you observe in classes, what are the biggest problems that you see with fluency instruction? Well, the biggest problem is teachers often fail to teach fluency at all, and students fall further and further behind as the texts get harder. Another problem is the reliance on round-robin reading, which is a real time waster compared with something like paired reading. Finally, even when teachers do have students work on fluency, there often is little or no repetition, so the students do not necessarily become fluent. They just read the material aloud and then move on. How much rereading makes sense? There have been two schools of thought on this. Some researchers specify a number of read-ins, and some specify a target level of performance, with students reading the text repeatedly until they hit that target. The research these days seems to favor those who argue for no more than 3 read-ins of a text. Students may not be perfect by that point, but they will have made the major amount of improvement that they're likely to see. Given that, move on to another text. And with that, I'm going to make that my last word on fluency today. If you're like some of the teachers who I'm concerned about are letting that slip a bit, I hope this blog entry, I hope this podcast will encourage you to bring it back into your daily instruction. If you're interested in having a written copy of this, you can go to my website, Shanahan on Literacy, and you'll find this under FAQs on Fluency, which is posting on July 27, 2024. With that, I want to thank Greg Johnson, our sound engineer, and thank you for tuning in. I look forward to talking to you again up the road a piece.